You are now dialed into the Thunderwolves sports feed with your host, LU Sports Information Director, Hugh Mullally, serving you up the freshest insights and sports news of the Thunderwolves' weekend pursuit for OUA dominance.
Well, hello and good morning and welcome to this May 1st edition of the Thunderbolt Sports Beat here on CLU Radio 102.7 FM, luradio.ca. In the booth with me this morning, long awaited, I've been promising to deliver this guest for some time. Coach Scott Morrison of the men's basketball team is live and direct here in the booth. We'll be answering our questions for the next 35-40 minutes. Of course, coming off a professional development year down in Portland, Maine, NBA Development League with the Maine Red Claws, affiliate of the Boston Celtics. And of course, he'll fill us in on all his adventures in New England, all of the basketball savvy that is being imported here back to Thunder Bay. Going to feed a little Public Enemy. No, it's a personal favorite of Coach. So why don't we feed that for you right now? You feeling that, Scotty?
I like it.
All right, all right. Get down.
Hopefully it's edited. Daddy got nothing to do with rap. Shut the backs, expose those cats. Who poses heroes, take advantage of blacks. Your government's gangsters will cut the crap. A war going on, so where y'all at? Fight for power, cause great responsibility. F the police, but who's stopping you from killing me? This ass is fiascos a loop by PE.
All right, P.E. in full effect from their latest album.
Latest and greatest.
Latest and greatest. It was how do you sell the soul to a soulless people who sold the soul? Yeah, welcome to the booth, Coach Scott Morrison.
Yeah, love the booth. Love being in the booth. It's very cozy in here.
All right, all right. Of course, we'll get to everything Lakehead in just a moment. We might as well bring it up now. We were just talking about it. Big Raptor game last night. Almost blew it. We were just saying Joe Johnson got going in the fourth quarter there.
Yeah, to give credit to my guy Pete Yiannopoulos in Montreal, who's never shy to tweet his opinion. But he did say that early in that game that if the Raptors let Joe Johnson get going, that there would be a game before we knew it, and it was. He was right. But lucky for the Raps and the millions of Toronto guys that are just on fire right now that they held on.
26-point lead in the third quarter at one point. And, I mean, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, both Paul Pierce minus 31 on the game. KG minus 20 or so on the game. It was I had a feeling. I mean, in typical Raptor fashion. I mean, there was a bit of a crash there at the end, but anyhow, they managed to pull it out of the fire. They almost got burned, though. I mean, especially on that last Allen Anderson three, where Amir Johnson closed out very sloppily and hammered him.
I see a lot of those 4-point plays this year. I don't know why guys are suddenly becoming dumber or less aware of that. That's clearly one of the worst fouls you can make in basketball.
Oh, I mean.
But obviously that was a big play. Anderson's been pretty clutch this playoffs, if I'm not mistaken, and seems like the kind of guy you don't want to leave that far away where you have to close out that hard. But.
No, because, I mean, they're up by 5. Even if they hit a 3, you're in the driver's seat if you're shooting free throws. You have
That's right. That was a big free throw, because then all of a sudden they could foul and be within 3 no matter what happened.
Exactly.
Really got them back in the game when the game was probably over. Plus, Amir Johnson fouled out, which may not have been the worst thing for the last possession, but he could have got a rebound. You never know.
No, but that last play, it could have went either way, because when the sideline out of bounds, got it into Blatch and fouled Blatch, hit the first, missed the second, and my boy Chuck Hayes, who had a pretty great game, apart from there was one silly pass he threw right after a score. He was trying to get a quick outlet and a quick turnover. Other than that, Chuck Hayes missed the box out on Blatch, the shooter. And, I mean, it ended up being bobbled into the backcourt, and they got a backcourt violation at the end of the game. But
Hayes may have seen a cheeseburger on the other side of the lane that he caught his eye.
Hayes, what is he, like 6'6", 260?
He's 6'6 both ways. I don't know what he would weigh, but he's a big boy. He had a nice floater from the top, from the elbow.
Unbelievable. And his release, he's got like a natural pump in his shot.
I don't know what. Every time I see that guy go on the court, I'm just like, man, who is this guy? How did he get to the NBA? But he gets it done for you.
No, he's plays good positional ball, and I thought he played good D. Anyhow, Raptors have created a hot Friday night date in Brooklyn. I don't know. I think that's going to be a tough game. Jason Kidd's definitely feeling the heat, but I mean, he's made a career of sinking the Raptors as a player with New Jersey. We'll see. I don't know. Hopefully Toronto. I mean, I just like to see a good game on Friday. Certainly it wasn't a good segue into the next game to have Brooklyn put up 44 points in 10 minutes.
No, and Kidd messed up. They fouled when they they put the ball into Blotch's hands there to get fouled when they probably should put it into a shooter's hands with 4 seconds left. But personally, I like to see the game go 7, just so go back to Toronto, and then the 7,000 people that are just in a frenzy in Toronto might actually excite themselves into just exploding. They might just explode all over the Raptor Square.
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Square. I've never seen a... It's great. I guess I'm kind of hating because none of my teams are in the playoffs. But when you see those guys going crazy, you just want to say, man, act like you've been there. But it's good to see everyone getting fired up. And basketball has certainly grown a lot in Canada, even in the last, say, 2 years. So it's good.
And there was a bit of chirping going on from the Brooklyn Twitter feed last night. The Brooklyn Nets Twitter feed said, this is what home fans should look like, or something like that.
Yeah, I took it to be a compliment for the fans. I wasn't sure if I was misreading into the message or the tweet, but it seemed like Brooklyn was giving the Raptors fans props. I wish they should. I mean, how many pro teams do you see where there's thousands of people standing out in the rain? Home or away games for the series, they're out there. And Toronto, they like to get behind their stars, and you got Drake out there. It's quite a scene. If they can keep the momentum going, it's going to be a big deal down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think whatever they're in the driver's seat now. I think it'll be all obviously Kyle Lowry, incredible play last night, had some incredible threes. I mean, that three at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
It's icing on the cake. Finished with 36, 8-6, I think. Anyhow, and of course, maybe this is a discussion for next week, but who knows? Toronto may not be in it next week. So just imagine if we had Miami Heat next round.
There won't be enough confetti in the city of Toronto to fill that arena if they win a game against Miami, I tell you that. But it'd be nice to see them try to get it. I mean, even get a couple more home games this year would be nice.
Because they did get them, I think, once in the regular season.
Yes, yeah. So did a lot of teams that aren't going to get them now.
Yeah, but no, it's very true. It's very true.
New Jersey actually, I think, won the series with Miami, if I'm not mistaken. But again, I still wouldn't.
Yeah, Brooklyn.
Put much stock into that. But
Brooklyn swept them 4-0.
4-0. I didn't know that.
4-0. And I'm not sure what the lineup was when the Raptors got them. I don't know if LeBron was playing or if Wade was out or what, but
it'd be better next time, no matter what, who was playing that.
It would be an interesting matchup, I think. You know, with the whole, I think there'd be lots of fuel. Chirp, Chris Bosh.
Yeah, that's true. I never even thought of that angle, but I just know people are going to be fired up if the Heat come to town for the playoffs. It's going to be crazy down there.
Well, then we're on TNT. Then we got Chuck you know, covering some of the games, right?
That's true. So it'll be a big deal. Barkley will be enjoying the Toronto nightlife. He won't be able to talk. His voice will be gone.
So that's NBA. It's very exciting times. You know, obviously, you know, the NBA is. It's been a great year for basketball. NCAA tournament, one of the best ever. NBA playoffs, one of the best first rounds ever.
For sure.
And even the NHL is feeding three game sevens last night. But Montreal-Boston tonight, that's a storied rivalry.
That'll be big news back home in the Maritimes.
Oh, it was it divided families. fathers against sons.
Sons against
sisters.
So those are the two main teams back home, so everyone's going to have someone opinion on that series.
Yeah.
I actually saw a Bruins game this year. It was and a Habs game. I went to two hockey games this year. And both games were, the atmospheres made the NBA seem pale in comparison to the NHL atmospheres. The fans are just a little bit more fired up, a little bit more throwing caution to the wind with their behavior.
Yeah.
And it made for an exciting environment. So I'll actually know a couple of the players' names on those teams. I'll have to follow it.
All right. That should be it'll be exciting for sure. So speaking of, you know, Boston and New England in general, you're coming off just about 6 months, 6-7 months in Portland, Maine, working with the Maine Red Claws of the Celtics affiliate. You're back now on the ground, actively, you know, we've been hosting a lot of recruits the last couple of weeks. We're going to get an announcement out probably this afternoon about another big addition of Addie Ogunye, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I believe so. I'm going to get a little bit. This last name could use a little tweaking, I think, but I'm not going to be the one to try and correct you. And we'll go with that for now. Hopefully, Addy's not listening, or if he is, he's not too offended.
But he's a prospect coming out of the Peel District in Toronto.
Addy actually played for a former Thunderwolf, Carlo Zafferani. I'm probably pronouncing that name wrong too. Sorry, Carlo. But Carlo also coached some great players at his high school, Duville. One of those is in the NBA right now, Tristan Thompson. And another is playing very high level of pro in Germany named Warren Ward, who is no stranger to Lakehead fans from his days at Ottawa. I'd like to think we got the best of Warren while he was playing, and then he can't really retain any eligibility to try and dispute that, so we'll go with that. But Addy, I think, is going to be another great player from that program. They're all well coached. They have high ceilings when they come out because their fundamentals are strong and they're good athletes, and he's no different. I think he's going to be a very strong core player for us for the next 4 or 5 years at that big wing spot.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it looks like it seems like he's coming from a cohort there in Peel that, like, if they're not going to, you know, one of the top-tier CIS teams, they're going D1. To the States. So I mean,
he's, for sure,
he's coming from a strong pedigree, and we're looking forward to seeing him in a Thunderbolts uniform.
I think if he had another year of high school, he'd be a Division I player as well. He's just a little bit late getting going. He's improving so fast. I think we got a steal there.
All right. Once again, that release will be going out this afternoon. Anyhow, so tell me, Scotty, you're working alongside, you know, just a rung below the teams we were just talking about, the Toronto Raptors, Brooklyn Nets. I mean, the Boston Celtics were not exactly a playoff contender this year, but, you know, there's not a whole lot dividing the middle of the pack, especially in the East. So, I mean, you had a chance to work with, the Maine Red Claws, who had some players dressing for Maine and dressing for Boston the next night.
Yeah, we had both guys that started with the season with Maine get called up throughout the year to the NBA, which was pretty cool to see and just watch them play in the league after working with them for a couple months in Portland. And we also had three or four Celtics that spent time with us, whether they be just looking for some extra time because they were bench players, or in the case of a guy like Rondo, he had to rehab his knee and wanted to get a little bit more closer to a live scrimmage before having to come off the disabled list. So we got to see guys like him come down and play with us too. So it was a pretty good experience. And obviously the exposure to the coaches at both levels was the main reason I went down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very grateful to both organizations because they welcomed me and the other staff members with open arms. And basically they had an open door policy, and I got to go to Boston maybe 7-8 different times to see practice, see how they get ready for the game, see what they do during the game, and got kind of a taste of everything that goes on at that level. So it was nice. It was nice from a coaching development point of view, but it was also a pretty good experience from even just a regular fan's point of view.
Yeah, it's interesting just to get a perspective on that sort of, you know, that elite level, that professional level. But, you know, a lot of basketball coaches say, as, you know, a basketball coach that I think coached both of us at different phases of our career back in PEI, Dale Ferris would always say, you know, boys, it's a simple game. It's a simple game, boys. And, you know, there must be some takeaways, you know, and obviously when players are playing at that level. But, I mean, could you perhaps speak to some of those, maybe there some strategic or tactical things that that you saw? Maybe it was players that you're like, wow, I can't believe that guy, you know, I can't believe that guy needs work on his 1-2 step to his layup, maybe. Or maybe he's not finishing with his left hand on the left side or what have you.
I think I saw both sides of that. Definitely saw some guys where, just like you said, you look at them and you're like, man, I can't believe this guy needs work on some simple fundamental. And I think as coaches at that level, you can't get too excited about the name on your jersey. You got to remember what the game's all about. And even at that level, the guys with that athleticism and that talent, they still have to have the good base of fundamentals. And you do spend a lot of time working on basic fundamentals. I remember we had a guy named Daniel Orton on our team this year who was cut by the NBA after spending 3 or 4 years in the NBA. And one of the things he was working on was just staying lower on his pivots in the post. So just very basic stuff. And at the same time, the X's and O's in the NBA are so, I guess, they've been examined and re-examined so many times, it's hard to maybe get something new. It's kind of a copycat league where if it works for one team, other teams start looking at it. But an example of something that they do the best probably in the world would be pick and rolls or ball screens. And just the offensive side, the defensive side, it's a little bit different look into it than I had before. And I think that would be the first thing that I would point to from a technical standpoint that I learned the most. There was lots of things, but I think pick and rolls is kind of, the NBA is kind of known for pick and roll, both on offense and defense.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's necessarily the best thing, but I think a lot of the other stuff is just easier to defend at that level. Like, you know, two athletic guys can defend an off-ball screen a lot easier than they can on the ball screen when there's someone attacking. So that's something I've been already working with our guys here on to try and improve the last 2-3 weeks.
Yep.
And I hope it's going to be maybe more of a integral part of our system at Lakehead based on what I learned last year.
And I mean, thinking of that, you know, the NBA, you know, the pick and roll being at least half of almost every team's offense is initiated off a high pick and roll with their, whether it be, you know, it's DeMar with Raptors, or it's Joe, I don't know, Joe Johnson is going more of a post-up game right now. But LeBron certainly, I mean, not that he necessarily needs many picks to get open. Turning to, you know, in a month's time, I believe you'll be joining back up with the junior men's national team.
Yes.
And you're going to the international game. And would you say the pick and roll is as prevalent there with those youngsters in the international game? And what kind of intricacies are we going to see there?
I would say that it's a little bit less compared to the NBA, and there's more off-ball stuff. However, my first summer, which was 2 summers ago with the Canadian team, I definitely got a lesson in how to play the pick and roll in terms of a five-man perspective, not just the guy with the ball and the guy screening. The European teams and the South America teams do a great job of rolling hard to the rim with their big and forcing kind of the perimeter guys to help out, which opens up, obviously, the perimeter. Now, in North America, we have a tendency to just go to the rim with the big man or the ball, and the Europeans have taught us a few things about you know, making the long pass to the wing, making the defense rotate as opposed to just trying to pound it to the glass. So I think over the last 2 years or 2.5 years, I've been really fortunate to see a lot of different stuff, and I like to think that my own knowledge base is expanding quite a bit as long as I try to remember to keep an open mind and see as much as I can.
All right. Packed a lot in there, Coach, but hopefully our listeners caught most of that, and certainly our basketball-savvy audience out there certainly interested in seeing, you know, seeing what's in store for the Thunderwolves. I mean, we're coming off a year that, you know, was a lot of turnover. We had about nine guys, our top nine players, retire, graduate, move on to different things. So, I mean, I think all in all, I mean, it was a successful year in terms of, you know, getting new guys into the mix and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, who's going to be our main core for the next, you know, 3-4 years moving forward.
Yeah, I think we took a big step into figuring that out. That was definitely one of the goals of this past season, was to figure out which guys are in or which guys are going to be good enough to be on board for this next run. I would have hoped that maybe we had a few more from last season in that core, but we do have 4 or 5 key guys that I think are going to be, you know, big names for us over the next little run, including Henry Tan, Brent Wallace, Alex Robichaud, for example, in terms of young guys. Then we also have Harvey Thompson and Joey Nedichorek, which are experienced guys that kind of are going to help stem the tide or bridge the gap between one era to the next.
Yep.
And we're just that much closer. We're a year closer to figuring out what it is. I like to think that Addy, the kid that we're announcing today, is going to be a piece of that puzzle. And we got to add maybe 1 or 2 more pieces at the 4 spot and a future point guard when Dwayne and Ryan Thompson graduate. So if we can get those things done this year, then I think we can start looking at our end goals.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't fill those pieces, then we still have to work hard and maybe get a little bit more recruiting done next year. But I hope that we can shore those spots up and put the team on the floor that the fans are going to see for the next 3-4 seasons.
All right. That sounds good. Well, we're going to stop for a brief, some messages from the station here, but we'll be back after just a few minutes here with, we get about maybe 10 more minutes in with Coach Morrison here on CLU Radio 102.7 FM and LUradio.ca. All right, back in the mix here on CLU Radio 102.7 FM and the Thunderbolt Sports Feed here live in the booth with me this morning, Coach Scott Morrison. Scotty, how we doing?
Doing good. Hope it dries up a little bit.
Yeah, I think everybody's saying that around T-Bay. It's a little sloppy. We're just talking a little NBA, a little LU basketball, and of course trying to get a sense of you know, some of your experiences south of the border. It looked like I did catch, you know, some highlights and some online video from the main Red Claws stadium, and it looked like they have one of the better atmospheres around the league.
Yeah, I would compare it to kind of the Lakehead Thunderwolves of the D-League. Not the biggest arena, but always full, or pretty much always full. A lot of the arenas we go into would be, you know, 6,000-7,000 seat arenas, and there'd be 600-700 people there.
Mm.
Not the most well-attended league. Probably the most people watching that league are scouts, stuff like that online.
Yeah.
But in Maine, it was just like a, you know, the city really rallied around the team. In the summer, they have the Red Sox farm team there, so it's kind of a nice little tie to the Boston pro teams that everyone is basically diehard fans for.
Yeah.
So it was cool, same people at the games, season ticket holders, and we'd see them around the city, and they'd be giving us the daps or whatever. So just like Thunder Bay, it was a lot like that, and they were very proud of their team. The D-League isn't as much about winning. It's obviously more about developing the players and the coaches. So it's kind of hard because the fans still want to win. But as long as the games are competitive, I think they got excited. And also the minor league teams in the U.S. do a great job of promoting their little promos at halftime or at the end of the quarter or things like that. And they get the fans really into it. And even the players and coaches, sometimes you find yourself during a timeout, you know, watching the guy take the half-court shot and just hoping he hits it so he can go over and, like, chest bump him or something. But it was cool. It was cool like that. a lot of fun and stuff going on in the D-League. No one took it really too serious. The most serious times are probably when you're in practice and working guys out.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, we were talking about earlier about, you know, how some of the fundamentals are, you know, obviously nothing, simple game, not a whole lot changes when you get to that level. Apart, you know, I think the biggest thing is just the sort of the athleticism and the physical specimens that you get in that league. You know, you're just bigger, faster, stronger.
Yeah, and a lot of times in the NBA, too, they're not. It's not like college where if we brought in a 7-foot freshman like Brent Wallace, for example, you know, we'd spend 5 years developing his all-around game as best we could. Whereas in the NBA, if you're 7 feet and it's determined that you can only, you know, you're going to be a rebounder and a putback guy, then that's literally what you're going to work on. You're not going to work on your outside shot or your ball handling. You're just going to learn how to catch it, rebound it, and put it back in.
Yeah, like a Tiago splitter.
Exactly. So they're more looking for, you know, a specific role. And the example I experienced this year was one of the players that I was working with throughout the season was named Chris Babb. And Chris is a great defender. He was all defensive team in the Big 12 his last year of college. But he got cut by the Celtics in the preseason. And basically the main reason was he wasn't good enough at running to the corner. And that sounds basic, like there's probably a lot of people, if there's anyone listening, there's probably someone out there right now practicing their running to the corner hoping to make the NBA. But basically Chris was a good shooter. And in the NBA, if you're a spot-up shooter, you got to get to the corner as fast as you can so that you can space the floor for the guys that can put the ball on the floor and attack and do their thing. So I literally showed Chris film of another guy in the league that the Celtics had said was doing a good job of that. And we just watched clips of him running from defense to the corner on offense. And we added a couple drills where Chris had to sprint to the corner and shoot it right away. And then, you know, credit to him watching the games afterwards, he made a point to do it. And sure enough, 2 or 3 weeks later, he got called up. Whether that run to the corner was the final straw that got him called up, I don't know. But it taught me that the NBA is more about, you know, little things fitting together than it is about being LeBron James. If you have LeBron James, you're probably going to win. But only one team has him. So the rest of the team's got to, you know, try and be more perfect with their spacing and little details.
Well, yeah, and your role players, right?
It's all role players. And in the D-League, too, if you think about it, they're not looking for the next LeBron in the D-League. They're looking for the guys that can play the small roles.
Yeah, or maybe they're looking for the guy that might be able to defend a LeBron, perhaps, maybe.
Yeah, off the bench.
Something like that.
Yeah, you know, we need someone to defend LeBron for 5 minutes.
You know, you're looking for, a Thabo Sefolosha or some defensive specialist like that, perhaps. I don't know.
Yes, your pronunciation of these names is better than mine. but no, for sure. So, you know, that was a big learning thing for me. And it was nice because it kind of reinforced the need for the small details, which is probably what most coaches prefer to be focusing on anyway.
Yeah. We've only got a few minutes left, Coach, so I'd like to finish sort of on a more OUA note. The divisions, I mean, this is announcement is yet to be made. It's known around the league, but there's going to be a shuffling of some teams. Nothing major, but, I mean, there's going to be a rearrangement of the teams into divisions. It used to be East and West, about 8 or 9 teams each, 21 games in the season. But if I'm not mistaken, it's going to go, both those East and West are going to be split into divisions, and you'll play your own division twice, and then everybody else once.
Yes, if I'm not mistaken,
for a total of 19
divisions. Four divisions.
For a total of 19 games.
Yes. Okay. So I don't know much about it. I've never been a guy to, like, follow the politics of the OUA. I feel that the coaches don't really have much control over what's decided in the end. And we're better off focusing on things like recruiting and working players out.
Yeah.
However, you obviously got to know where you're playing and who you're playing against. I know we have McMaster, Guelph, and Brock, I believe, in our division.
Yeah.
So those will kind of become our more natural rivals.
Yeah.
And then everybody else we got once.
So I've obviously McMaster has been, you know, a tough rival for the past 4 or 5 years. I mean, we got the better of them, you know, the first, you know, not including last year, where they were, you know, clearly a dominant team in our league, and I mean finished I think 5th or 6th in the nation. But you know, that's going to be a tough go. Of course, they do graduate several key players this year.
Yeah, they're going to be tough. They got a lot of guys back. They have good young players. I think we're going to have a chance to compete with them. But obviously, they're the first team on the list that everyone's going to be trying to fight for next year in our division.
Yeah.
Brock has also been recruiting very heavy. They're going to be really young. We're going to have to try and keep, you know, working hard to stay ahead of them. And Guelph has always been one of the toughest teams to play. Never the most talented, but one of the toughest teams to get out of there with a win.
Yeah, just disciplined, I find. And they got, you know,
tough.
They got a, you know, they play well around, you know, they've always played well around one or two good, great shooters and just beat you up on the inside. And, of course, Brock had, I think, OUA Rookie of the Year and Danny Elgatti last last season. He was OUA West Rookie of the Year for sure. I'm not sure if he took it for the whole league. But, you know, OUA obviously reshuffling the deck a little bit, but it's still going to be, you know, the number one league in the country. I mean, with, you know, Carleton, Ottawa, and Windsor, Mac, and, I mean,
Ryerson.
I mean, the list goes on. Ryerson.
Laurentian's playing a lot better Laurentian, the last couple years.
Laurentian played great. And, I mean, it's a real dogfight to get out of the OUA. And, I mean, certainly next year seems like a good opportunity, given that the finals are going to be held at Ryerson at the end of the year. So there'll be three Ontario teams playing in nationals. So it's certainly an opportunity, you know, possibly for us to return to the nationals.
Yeah, I mean, we're going for it. That's our goal. I don't see any reason why we can't get there. We're going to need probably a little bit of scheduling help in the playoffs, but the only way to get that is to do a good job in the regular season.
Absolutely.
It's a little tougher with Ryerson hosting instead of Carleton. No offense to my good friend Roy at Ryerson, but, you know, in these past few years with Carleton hosting, they also won their way in, so it was almost like a bonus spot for somebody else, that host bid.
Yeah.
Whereas Ryerson is more than capable of winning their way in. But if they win their way in, then Carleton's going to be looking to beat somebody out. So it's going to be a dogfight no matter what. But it is nice to have the tournament in Toronto. I think Ryerson did a good job hosting the Final Four.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, a perfect size venue for the Nationals. So hopefully the people of Toronto will get behind that 1/100th of a percent of the way they're behind the Raptors. And there'll be lineups to get into the gym, lighting fires in the streets and so forth.
Well said. Yeah, no, a great venue there at the old Maple Leaf Gardens. And, of course, Ryerson, I mean, they've been a basket away from making nationals 2 years in a row, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even – they kind of got maybe hosed a little bit this year with the wild card process, but it's tough when you leave it to that. But in our conference, I believe we've had 5 of the last 6 national medals the last 2 years. But the year before – Carleton, ourselves, Ottawa were 1-2-3. This year, Carleton, Ottawa were 1-2. So, I mean, it's hard to argue with those results. And I think if Ryerson had been in the Final Eight this year, they probably would have had a shot at that bronze medal. So hopefully we can do it again next year.
All right. Well, I understand you've got some commitments here later today and coming up. So we'll leave it at that. But it's always a pleasure to have you on the air. And we look forward to maybe getting a feed from you after the national team schedule there.
Yeah, sounds good. We're going to Colorado this year for the FIBA qualifiers, so it should be a little bit shorter of a time away and maybe a little less hectic with the travel.
Not as much jet lag.
No, I'm actually looking forward to seeing Colorado. I haven't been there, and I heard it's nice.
All right. Well, thanks, Scotty.
Thank you.
All right, Scott Morrison of the men's basketball team there. Here's some Clash, If Music Could Talk.